Good afternoon. I'll call the House Education Finance Committee to order. We don't have a quorum yet. The members are still filtering in, but as always, we've got a great listing of testifiers lined up and some folks on standby if we have enough time. I'm trying to make sure that we are allowing adequate time for questions and testimony today, so we're trying to be a little more mindful of that, as many of our hearings have been just more wonderful testifiers than we can get to. So with that, the topic of today's hearing is on the achievement gap, and the purpose of our meeting today is not just to again reiterate the facts and figures around the achievement gap. We all know it exists, but to hear from people that can point to strategies that have been effective, schools that are beating the odds, strategies that are actually making a difference. So that will be the focus of today's hearing and testifiers. And so members, we'll go ahead and start well, we can take testimony, right? Oh, we do have a quorum. Okay, very good. So we now have a quorum. So I will ask Representative Christensen if you've had a chance to review the minutes and if you would make a motion for their approval.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes.
All right, thank you very much. Minutes have been moved. And any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Very well, minutes are approved. Thank you very much, Representative Christensen. And with that, we can go ahead and move into today's topic area. So I will call down our first panel is to actually hear from some schools. We've got some charter schools and other more traditional public schools, as we know them, here to testify today. And I will start by asking representatives from Longfellow in Rochester, from Global Academy, and from Valley View, if you would move to the testifier table. Good afternoon. I appreciate you all being here, and we don't have to go in any particular order. I will say, though, I don't know if the representative from Valley View, I did have some email back and forth with Representative Connie Bernardi, who is thrilled that you are here today, and I don't know if she was planning to try to come to introduce you to the committee. Maybe? Okay. So I tell you what, why don't we start with one of the other testifiers, and if Representative Bernardi gets here, we'll offer her that opportunity. If she comes a little later, we'll allow her to address the committee if she wishes. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, my name is Helen Fisk, and I'm the director of Global Academy. And Global Academy is a charter school that was founded by me and Melissa Storbach and our assistant director, who's here today. And we are very thrilled to be here to be able to tell you about our school and the success we've had in closing the achievement gap. We are a classic strip mall charter school. We are located just north of Minneapolis and Columbia Heights on 41st and Central, nestled between Napa Auto Parts and New Horizons Daycare. We serve 430 students in grades K through 8. We're in our seventh year of operation. Most of our students are drawn from Minneapolis or Columbia Heights, but we also have students from half a dozen other local communities. We have a diverse student body. Most students are immigrants or from immigrant families. 75% of our students are students of color. 92% of our students are free and reduced lunch population. And we serve a lot of Muslim students in our school. We have many languages spoken in our school. Those include Somali, Arabic, English, Oromo, Wolof, Mandinki, Mandingo, Spanish, Urdu, Amharic, Farsi, and Bengali. We have been, I'm happy to say, one of the most successful schools in the state in terms of closing the achievement gap. And contrary to many schools with similar demographics, our students last year on the state MCA test scored above the state average in reading, math, and science. And just to give you an example of one demographic group and our success, I picked the group labeled black, not of Hispanic origin. In math, the state average was 33.2%. which is pretty low. Global Academy students, it was 68.2%. In reading for that demographic, the statewide average was 33.9%. We were at 63.7%. And in science, the global or the state average was 24.1%. We were at 62.5%. So we're very pleased with our students' progress in those areas. And basically, if you look at our free and reduced lunch population or our English language learner students, you would see the same dramatic difference in results when comparing our students to the statewide average. During the past 4 years, we have been designated by the Department of Education as a celebration school 1 year and a reward school 3 other years, the highest designation. And since we opened in 2008, we have consistently been on the Star Tribune's Beat the Odds list in both reading and math. So the question that you asked, or that I'm told you are interested in, is how do we do this? How do we close the achievement gap with our students? And I often am asked this, and my teachers, I ask some of my teachers, and sometimes we're pretty stumped because we just go to work and we work hard and do what we do every day. But the answer is really pretty simple. It never occurred to us that our students would do anything else. It never occurred to us that our students would be anything but successful. I spent many years working in expensive private schools with very privileged students. At those schools, the assumption was that every child has untapped capacities and capabilities and that every school would hold these students to the highest level of academic scholarship. We hold these same assumptions and standards at Global Academy. We didn't start a school thinking, oh, what can we do to create a school so students can be minimum, pass minimum requirements on state tests? That wasn't our thinking at all. We designed a school that we hoped would result in students who are great thinkers and problem solvers and would appeal to any type of learner. Our mission states this. Our mission is Global Academy is a free, chartered, public elementary and middle school that seeks to serve a diverse group of students. Global Academy is committed to service in the broader world based on the goals of the International Baccalaureate Organization. Empowered by academic rigor, graduates of Global Academy will be fully prepared for success and leadership in challenging high school programs. We started a school to give students the skills and knowledge to change the world, not to pass a test. But both students who are empowered by academic rigor can pass a test as well. So that's the good news. So here are some of the main things we believe about schools and closing the achievement gap. We believe that you need to select the most challenging curricula that results in well-educated students. We believe that students who are well-educated are problem solvers who can transfer knowledge and skills from one situation to the next. The heart of our school is the International Baccalaureate Primary Years Program. IB is a transdisciplinary program. The program focuses on teaching kids to think in big conceptual terms. Change, form, perspective, function, causation are terms that you will hear kindergartners use at our school as well as eighth graders. We give students mental constructs so that they can understand the world. We force kids to make connections between content areas, and these connections make kids have higher order thinking skills. IB requires that students engage in the world and empowers them to actively make the world a better place. A key part of IB is having students engage in action cycles that projects, which they do, that are community service projects that they generate themselves to make the world a better place. Second, we believe that it's important to honor the knowledge and experience that each child brings to our school. We look for strengths, not deficits. In an IB world school, being an English language learner is an asset, not a deficit, because being multilingual is valued in an IB world school. In 1967, I was 10 years old. I grew up in Eagan, Minnesota, lived my whole life there. I had never met a person who wasn't white or Christian in my life. 10-year-olds at Global Academy at my school are multilingual world travelers. They may not speak English as well as I did at age 10, but they have a wealth of knowledge that they can bring that enriches our school and enriches all of us, and we tap on that every day at Global Academy. Third, we believe in scientifically based research. We selected our math and reading programs because the research supported its efficacy. These programs also use an inquiry approach, which complements our IB World program and also leads kids to a higher standard. Fourth, we believe that all students need to be fluent users of technology. We were the first charter school in the state to have a one-to-one iPad program for our students. Technology is a ubiquitous tool for learning at Global Academy, and it's a necessity to do anything in this world, whether high school, college, or a job. You need to be able to use technology effectively. We also believe that technology has allowed our teachers to differentiate to meet the individual needs of students. Finally, we believe that the single most important asset of a school next to its students is its teachers. We have phenomenal teachers who are committed to the mission of our school and have a growth mindset. I tell my teachers the same speech at the end of every school year. You can have a lot of nice stuff. You can have an iPad in every room for every kid. You can have books and active boards and all sorts of stuff. But it really doesn't make a single bit of difference unless that child walks into a classroom where there is a caring, qualified adult who only has their best interest at heart and believes they can learn and succeed. That's the staff that I have at Global Academy. We provide extensive professional development, and as a charter school with an at-will contract, I am able to control the quality of my staff in my building, and that's a key part of our success. You might be able to tell I love talking about Global Academy and could go on and on. I'm going to end with just a quick story that I think emphasizes how we close the achievement gap by some of the principles that I stated. We had a fifth grade class that was studying the topic through our IB program that personal economic decisions impact our lives was the broad theme the students were studying. And the kids got very interested in child labor as a result of this. They did a lot of research into child labor. In fact, they were enraged when they heard about child labor situations in different parts of the world. So the teacher asked them, as a good IB world teacher would, what would you do about this? What should we do about this? And the kids said, we need to make people aware of what's going on with child labor around the world. So the teacher said, well, how are you going to do that? Well, we need to go protest. We need to have a protest and show what's going on with child labor laws. So the teacher got a bus, and we took the kids right across the street to the state capitol, and they had prepared protest chants. They had flyers to hand out to people. They had information to give out, and they stood out there for 3 hours, and everybody who stopped by, other school groups, probably some of you perhaps, other visitors to state capitol came up and said, what is this group of urban inner city kids doing on the state capitol grounds protesting child labor? And they did that for hours, and it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And on the way home on the bus, most of the kids fell asleep. They were just exhausted by this activity. But if you think about what they did, they learned about an issue, they researched it, they had a big picture view of how to solve a problem, they took action, and they did just what the mission of our school states. They were empowered by academic rigor. Exhausted, but empowered. And really, that's how we believe you can close the achievement gap in Minnesota. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Fisk. I do have a couple of people who have wanted to ask questions, so I'm going to let those two ask questions, and then we'll move on to our next testifier. I'm hoping that once we get through this panel, if there's more questions, we'll go back to the committee. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the work you're doing at Global Academy. I think the Chair's goal here today is to gather information so we can compare and see what's working in different schools. So,
that's true.
Excellent. So I want to check on a couple of data points with you.
Sure.
You'll find that one of my frustrations around here is that we refer to free and reduced price lunch student numbers as if qualifying for free lunch is the same as qualifying for reduced mm-hmm. price lunch. And I think those are two very different experiences for those kids. So I'd ask you to break out what percentage of your students qualify for free lunch, what for reduced price lunch, what percentage of your students receive special education services, and what percentage of your students qualify as homeless and highly mobile.
Yes, for free and reduced lunch, the overall percent I stated was 92%, 11% of those are reduced, 81% are free. Our special ed population is at about 9% of our student body. And we have few homeless students in our school. I think out of 430 right now, we only have 3 homeless students. So we have a small percentage of homeless students.
So, Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, very little mm-hmm. homelessness and a low special education mm-hmm. rate.
Well, I think the statewide special ed population is higher than that. But I can make some comments about special education. I think our school culture is so calm and peaceful that a lot of students who might be identified as special education in other settings, we do not need to identify in our school setting. So I think we've got kind of a typical population for special education.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier. Thank you for the work you're doing. I know we have a couple charter schools in my school district that have won awards, and have you followed the students after they've left your school? I know they go to fifth grade in your school. How are they doing later into the junior high and senior high?
Ms. Fisk.
Mm-hmm. Our students uniformly come back to Global Academy and report that they found Global Academy much more academically rigorous than the high schools they attend, and they're well prepared for high school, and we're happy to hear that. Many of our students, our first graduating classes now, are now seniors. Many of them are in the PSEO program, so they have had good success in the next stage of life. We've also found with most of our 8th graders going into 9th grade that they are ready for 9th grade math, they're ready for their, you know, regular 9th grade curriculum, if not the advanced 9th grade curriculum. So we've had good success with that.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer,
thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll ask you to just stay put in case we come back to the panel with questions. And thank you for that. All right. Next, Willie Ford with Valley View. Yeah, thank you. We can get you the testifier as close to the microphone as possible. That helps all of us hear better and for the tape to pick it up. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me here. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am Willie Ford, principal of Valley View Elementary School and this year Columbia Academy Middle School in Columbia Heights. This is my fifth year in the district. I'm pleased to be here today. Our demographics, we have enrollment 578 students, grades pre-K through fifth grade. We just became pre-K January 5th of 2015. 38% of our students are Latino students, 34% are black, 20% white, 6% Asian, 1% Native, 1% other. Our free and reduced lunch this year is 84%. MCA scores last year, math 71% proficiency, reading 47% proficiency, science 41% proficiency. I monitor all aspects of our academic program. This includes daily lesson plans, instructional practice, and assessment data. I also check for consistent implementation of our school-wide programs and interventions in order to create and sustain a culture of academics across all classrooms. Math and reading are co-taught to provide more attention to individual student needs. Probably the heaviest, 100% of the classes are reading co-taught. Not all of our classes have, we don't have the resources to have math co-teachers in all of our classrooms. These needs and their corresponding intervention slash extensions are identified in individual learning plans for our students. Formative assessment data drives instructional decision-making in weekly PLCs and twice annual day-long data retreats. All grade 3rd through 5th grade teachers use a set of AVID strategies and procedures to help create college and career readiness. Our 6-hour and 25-minute school day, minus 45 minutes for lunch recess, has been extended through before and after school activities to support and extend learning for all participating students. Last year, over half of our students participated in one or more of these activities. My daily focus is moving our school from good to great through hard work, collaboration, and commitment to high expectations. By inspecting what is expected, I ensure we maintain high standards and support all of our learners in accomplishing their goals. My constant message to staff is that if you set high standards for students and truly believe that they can reach these standards, children will rise and meet your expectations. I challenge our teachers to strive for excellence, and as a result, I see these high expectations extend to their classrooms. My confidence in their ability to reach high goals helps them to have the same confidence in their students. Students learn that cooperation, responsibility, and self-control are values we uphold. By adhering to a common set of expectations for behavior and dress, we create a sense of community where all stakeholders feel secure. Relationship building lays the groundwork for a culture of rigor and fun. I believe adult continuous learning is essential. Teachers participate in weekly staff development with a rotating focus on academics, equity, family engagement, and classroom management. Sessions are led by teacher teams that build skill sets as well as rapport. As the principal, I prioritize collaborative learning because it increases our strength and confidence as a team and contributes to a positive climate. I have some recommendations. I'm thinking that this is one of the things we were supposed to do. So I do have some things that I would like in my world, if possible.
I would love to hear them, Mr.
Okay.
Port. Please go ahead.
So these are things that would... Okay, so I would like to have a longer school day and a longer school year. Our teachers have 5 hours and 40 minutes to teach reading, language arts, math, science, social studies, health, PE, music, and art. We now have additional media arts standards to cover as well. I mentioned about our pre-K program just moved into our building because we had some space issues. We just had six classrooms added to our building. January 5th, 2015 was the first time in 18 years that I've had four-year-olds in my school. This has been my desire since 1997 when I had a four-year-old Hmong student program funded by first grade preparedness dollars. Many of the students coming to us in kindergarten are already starting at a deficit, one that is difficult to overcome. Thank you for funding all-day kindergarten. We need to do the same for four-year-olds. Finally, our families deserve the best education we can provide. District and building administrators should have the opportunity to hire and retain the best teachers possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fort. Debbie, I have you on the list. All right, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I liked your presentation and your materials. I do notice in your materials that the students wear uniforms in order to avoid the distraction or the competitiveness of the clothing. You also note 75% of teachers have advanced degrees. That I'd be interested in what proportion of those have them within the field, because unfortunately, across different school districts, they have advanced degrees, but often in unrelated. And then Encore free after school programming. Who is funding that programming? If you could enlighten me,
Mr. Fox.
So, first of all, the Encore program, and you might have to refresh my memory on the other questions, but the Encore program was funded by a 21st Century Grant. That brochure is from last year. We handed those brochures out last spring in our recruiting efforts to increase our kindergarten students. So Encore 21st Century Grant, unfortunately this year we do not have that grant. We have a targeted services grant which inhibits the types of offerings we can offer our students, basically math and reading, and it's remediation rather than extension, or we had lots of arts types of programming with our Encore. It really enriched our school program. We felt like we had a strong academic component during the school day, and then we had also a focus and an emphasis on the arts because of our grant that we had last year. So, again, we don't have that this year. I think you mentioned about the uniforms. Okay, the uniforms, I think, helps the climate that we have in our building. It was initiated, this is the second year for uniforms for us. It was initiated by some parents several springs ago that had graduated from a REACH program. A REACH program is a program to help parents learn more about how schools operate and to help them focus on advocating for their children. So we had a graduating class of about, I think, 31 parents, and we had a question and answer session during one of the REACH meetings, and I was asked about uniforms. So this was in the springtime, so I stated obviously there was nothing I could do now in the spring, but if indeed they wanted me to pursue a survey asking parents about their interest in uniforms, I would do so. So that following fall, I did a survey of our staff and our families. We had a 91% return rate on that survey. 64% were for uniforms. 36% did not want uniforms. So we spent most of that year transitioning to have an approval for uniforms. The board made an approval decision in January or so of that year, couple years ago now, that we could have uniforms in our school. I think it helps promote the kind of climate, safe, orderly climate that we want to promote, one that's conducive for learning. And then there was one more piece.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've got 75% of your teachers with advanced degrees. What portion of those are actually advanced degrees in the fields that they're teaching?
Mr. Ford.
You know, yes, ma'am. I do not know. We had that was some data that was given to me by our district, so I'm not aware of that.
Representative Quam? Right. Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, I'm going to risk echoing myself from the last one, and I don't know how you want to approach this. I'm just trying to get us to comparables. So, sir, the same questions I asked the previous testifier. Can you break out your free and reduced price lunch numbers? What's your percentage of special education services or special education students and your percentage of homeless and highly mobile students?
Special education, yeah, Madam Chair, special education is 9%. I do not know exactly the number of the breakdown of free and reduced. I would say 80% are free. 20% of our number of 84% are reduced. And one other question?
Percentage of homeless and highly mobile students.
I do not know that, sir.
All right. Madam Chair,
Representative Dabney?
Is it fair to just have a blanket ask the future testifiers to answer these questions rather than me going back and forth? It seems more efficient.
Yes, I think that would be fair, Representative Dabney. So just to any future testifiers coming up, if you could provide that information about the school that you represent, that would be appreciated.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had one question. You said over half of them stay after school in activities. What about kids that aren't in activities? Do you kick them off the school grounds, or can they stay around for a while?
They generally go home. We have after school. We had after school busing, so a lot of our kids are bused. I heard our previous speaker was our students. We serve Hilltop, Fridley, Columbia Heights. We have about 20% of the students at my school are considered choice students. Choice is your students. A lot of those students are from North Minneapolis and Northeast Minneapolis. The kids that do not participate in Encore for various reasons, parents need them home for their schedules that fit their schedules, or they're unable to provide transportation to come and pick them up. So
I'm
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, I'll ask the question again. Do you kick them off if they're not in some kind of activity up at school grounds?
Mr. Fort.
Well, let me see. I wouldn't use that terminology, but generally we want them to we would encourage them to participate in the activities that we have. Otherwise, there's no supervision for those students. Elementary age students are up to 5 years of age. Well, now 4 years of age up to 12 years of age, and we also need parents to sign off. And we need to know that they've given permission for the kids to participate in the activities that we have. And if they don't have that permission, then we want them to be in a safe environment.
Representative Mullery?
Madam Chair, I guess I'm not going to get an answer, but I'll try once more.
Okay.
If they're not in something and they're not signed up, do you have them leave? I don't know.
I guess that answer would be yes.
Thank you. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Fort, for your presentation. It's obvious that you're doing a great job, and as you know, you look at the chart, beating the odds for all groups that typically don't achieve, it's absolutely wonderful. I do have a question, though. Your math score, that 71% proficiency, and just looking at the chart, is absolutely amazing. And, of course, the reading is good, too. But I'm just wondering if there's any way you can account for the disparity between the reading, the percentage of reading students reading that are proficient versus the math.
You know, this is my fifth year at Valley View, and I looked at some of the data when I came. I looked at some of the data for the school, and they've always had generally had higher in math scores than reading scores. And we have not figured out exactly why. We've tried to put a lot of resources into our literacy and reading because we wanted to pull those scores up as well. We've had some of the things that we do. We have some before school, after school programming where the kids use a program called Fast Math, which is for fluency, math facts to help. We had our kindergarten through second grade teachers had several years that they had some professional development around a program called cognitively guided instruction that was provided to our teachers. I think we have been taking the practice math test for a number of years, several years I should say, and have really strategically looked at the data that we get from our math scores, and then going back to the classroom, those teachers taking that information about the strand activities, where the kids are strong, where they need improvement, and having the time to address those needs. And so then when they have to take the test, that's the one that counts, they've done pretty well.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Ford, I just had a couple of questions for you, some of the points that you mentioned. And one is on parent engagement, and if you had anything you could share with. Do you do anything that maybe folks would consider somewhat unusual across, you know, public schools, or anything a little different to try to encourage parent engagement?
Well, I don't think unusual. I think our REACH program has been, our district has taken that on, and this is probably the fourth year for that REACH program. We're getting ready to start our second round of involvement with that program, and is at Valley View. We have, over a period of several years, rotated two schools a year for several years, and now we're back. Again, that program is to help parents become more comfortable with being in a school environment, giving parents strategies of ways to advocate for their children, telling them about some of the acronyms we have in education that we assume everybody knows, and such as MCA testing and things like that. I guess nothing in particular. We have a fun run that we're doing. I think pretty typical things that most schools do. We have a fun run in the springtime. We just started. We have a huge carnival that's in the springtime. We have a pretty large picnic. We have large activities, and then we have some activities that we try to build upon, like when we have music performances and things like that, we try to include some parent components, some time to let parents know about some of the things we do, some make and take kinds of things for math. We have a reading program, Mother Read, Father Read, in the fall, which is a way to our teachers help coach parents about reading to their children. We have had this is our third year now, we've had an African Heritage Night that we wanted to give a review the data, our academic data, our behavior data, talk about strategies about what parents need from us, how we can work better together as partners in their children's education. So I don't think a lot of anything that's different than maybe a lot of other schools.
Thank you. Just another question about one of your recommendations on a longer school day in a school year. If you were writing the legislation on that, what would you specifically be looking for? And would it be more targeted for students who need it, or just in general for your school population?
I think all of those factors. What we found is there have been different things that we wanted to do. We wanted to add in our building. And it's always been, okay, we have to take something off because we don't have the time to fit it in. The amount of time that I would add would be specifically for math and literacy instruction. Right now we're in an hour and a half, 90 minutes for reading / language arts and 60 minutes for math. I know there are some schools that have considerably more time dedicated in those areas. So that would be that's what I would propose. I know our schedule, we're working on our calendar for next year. Columbia Heights has 172 student days in the calendar. I just think we could do, I think we're doing an adequate job with the amount of time that we have. I think we could do a better job with more time.
Thank you. And Ms. Fisk, I'm going to give you the opportunity to respond to that as well. I don't know what your school day looks like or your hours per day.
School day is our students arrive at 8:35 and they leave at 3:40, and we have 172 to 174 school days per year, depending upon the year. And we're happy with that. We kind of have a philosophy, you need to make every minute count during the school day, and it's a long day for little kids when they end up in after-school programs and things like that. So we actually don't offer any after-school programs, and we have kind of a little bit longer than typical elementary school day, I think, in terms of contact hours, but our school year is kind of a typical school year, and we feel we should take the time we have and spend it well. We don't really need additional time, in our opinion.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to move now to our next testifier, who is here from Rochester and from Longfellow, and you have an interesting model that I know the committee will be interested in hearing about. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Representatives, Madam Chair Loon. I have a wealth of information. I'm going to start off and try to address some questions that have been raised here beforehand, though.
Introduce yourself for the
record. Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Chris Davidson. I'm principal at Longfellow 4515 Elementary in Rochester, Minnesota. Just to give you a brief history of Rochester or Longfellow, we are a year-round school. We follow a 45 or 9 weeks on and then 15 days off or 3 weeks off with about 6 weeks summer vacation. We're actually currently in our 19th year of this, so it's nothing really new to us. It's something that's been going on for quite a while. We're proud to say we've helped some other schools and other districts in the state also as well in Wisconsin help replicate this model somewhat. But to backtrack a little bit here, just demographics about Longfellow. We're a small school. We're 310 students currently, and over the past 5 years, we've ranged between 280 all the way up to about 320. So we've actually grown a little bit the last few years. We are approximately 40% minority. We are 40% free and reduced price lunch, and I'm sorry I can't break down specifically what percentage is free and what is reduced. I can tell you last year it was about 75% free and 25% reduced of that percentage. We've actually dropped our percentages over the last eight-year run. We went through some boundary changes about 6 years ago when we opened a new elementary in Rochester, and we used to be a neighborhood, what they call a neighborhood and choice school. And where we're located in Rochester is a more of an economically impoverished area, and our neighborhood students would come to the school and then open it up for choice after that because of our calendar. We are now 100% choice, and that's been that way for about 5 years now, or 6 years since the other school opened up. A little bit more about us. Since 2010, we've outpaced state averages in all four ethnic groups that we serve, Hispanic, Black, not of Hispanic origin, Asian, Pacific Islander, and white. 95% of those categories we have outpaced state standards or state proficiency rates. We received the Minnesota Campaign for Achievement, MINCAN Award in 2013 for Outstanding Latino and Black Student Performance. And in 2011, we were the Minnesota Business Partnerships Futures Award winner, I believe, with Global Academy back in fall of 2011. So we're very proud of those accomplishments, but there's a lot behind the scenes with that. And to tell our story a little bit, I have to say, and I'm going to honor this, is I followed a gentleman that really did a lot of groundwork at our school, the former principal, Les Ernster, before I came there, had a strong commitment to Longfellow. So I was very honored to follow his footsteps there. I'm going to go through our executive summary and then kind of tell you some more grassroots about what we're all about. So we are from Rochester. We're about 40% free reduced price lunch, but we follow a 45-15 instructional calendar with school beginning the last week of July. Following a six-week summer vacation, the students attend school each of the four instructional quarters for approximately 45 days, followed by 15 days of vacation with very minimal four-day weeks due to holidays. During each 15-day break, students are provided the opportunity to attend math and reading intervention classes, what we call intersession, in the morning for 1 week in October, one in January, and one in March. School-age child care and the 21st Century Community Learning Center program, or the grant, the same as Mr. Ford spoke to, offer enrichment activities during the remainder of the break for approximately two-thirds of our student population. So in all actuality, all but 6 weeks of the year, most of our students are in our building. The intersession classes are taught by Longfellow staff, where student-teacher ratio is low. to provide direct individualized instruction in a very focused environment. There are numerous benefits to the 4515 schedule. Students demonstrate greater retention and require less reteaching due to the strategically placed breaks. Our staff members are able to refresh and rework collaboratively during the three-week intersessions. Another attribute of the calendar is reduced discipline problems as a result of a stronger school culture. In addition to our calendar, Longfellow has an all-day, every-day kindergarten program that we believe extremely beneficial for building the morale and academic bridge between between school and home. And we've actually had all-day K for approximately 14 years now. And so I will reiterate, I appreciate the funding of all-day K. The inertia that comes out of kindergarten as a result of that, I have the data, it's simply amazing. Through data collaboration cycles, what we have at Longfellow, it's where amongst our teams of staff, Longfellow is currently infusing more technology and instructional process at all levels with a one-to-one focus. We are a one-to-one technology school now. We started 3 years ago as a pilot for Rochester Public Schools, and I'm very proud to say, as of yesterday, we have phase one sites, so six other schools joined us down that path. Currently, a tiered instruction model is implemented for reading instruction each day that maximizes our school staffing resources in all grades. With the support, we're able to provide small group instruction and more individualized instructions for the students, as well as support differentiation models to best meet student need within normal school hours. Items noted here are just a sampling of the ongoing creative work from our staff commits for assurance of a continued growth. We use our staff development funding to create research-based differentiation instruction models at each grade level. We use staff development to provide training for site-adopted technology-based instructional practices. And we implement the use of data collaboration as part of a grade level and prevention teams that meet in cyclical manners to focus on data review, interpretation for academic and the social needs of our students. A strong culture for learning is the foundation of who we are at Longfellow. Current research in the social-emotional domain demonstrates the need to infuse positive behavior intervention supports to proactively support student learning. We are proud to say that Longfellow has been implementing PBIS for numerous years. Every member of our learning community is guided by three guiding social principles: being safe, being respectful, and being responsible. We conduct weekly assemblies at the onset of the week that focus upon a specific character trait that is taught, modeled, and reinforced for a month. Each of the character traits are infused to the whole school experience, academic and social. This has provided the building block of strong positive social identities to solidify that our students have a genuine sense of belonging at Longfellow. We've established a strong tradition of creating high expectations for all of our learners and an academically progressive learning environment. Our current results are viewed as status reports as we strive to continuously improve in all these areas. We have a deep passion for learning at Longfellow that is reflected through our daily work. We welcome everyone to come and see firsthand what we're doing at Longfellow on a daily basis. Now, that's our executive summary there, but one of the best things about Longfellow, I will say, and I heard Mr. Ford here talk about it as well, equity-based. I'm a white middle-class man, and I haven't lived the experiences of a lot of the kids that I serve. And I started on a journey about seven years ago, 2008, learning. I have the privilege of having worked in different states and growing up in the South and understanding things differently, but I serve students that I don't know their existence. I don't have to change who I am sometimes when I walk to different environments. And for me to be very conscious about that and serving the students and the staff and the community I serve is very important to me. It's very important to the staff that we have. And that, I believe, is something that helps us be very successful. I had a presenter about 6 years ago came and presented, and we went to lunch that day, and she says, what you really want is for kids when they drive by your school say, that's my school. That's not where I go to school. That's my school. And that sense of belonging that kids have when they walk through Longfellow every day is really what we're all about. And when a student has that and they know that you're there for them and that we learn from them just as much as we learn from each other, that's highly, highly valuable. I can speak the edujargon. I can tell you about data collaboration. I can tell you about interventions. I can tell you about tiered instruction models. But it's relationship, relationship, relationship. That's really the crux of it. And when I am very racially conscious about who I am as a person and what I need to learn, I think it opens doors for our staff, for our students, for our community. So I'll leave it at that, and I'll open up to questions.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I do have a couple of people on the list for questions. Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm intrigued by the length of the school year. Could you tell us at your school, which is, I believe is K through 5.
Yes, sir.
How many days during the course of a calendar year a first grader is not in school?
Well, our school day calendar is 175 days. We follow the same contractual calendar that the rest of the staff members throughout Rochester follow. So there's 175 school days. So I believe the first graders will attend 175. Kindergarten will attend 173. We have 2 days at the beginning of the year to do some other kindergarten stuff. So outside of that, they're, well, I'll do the math real quick, about 190 days. They're not in session, not including, okay. I guess including weekends.
Madam Chair, I misinterpreted something you had said earlier. So
okay.
Thank you for your explanation.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the principal, first of all, what's the diversity of your teaching staff considering that you have these four ethnicity subgroups?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Davidson.
We are about 95% white. And I'll tell you, that's one of my key things, too, is we need to increase the diversity. Our students need to see themselves. That's important.
And a follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. You talked about the success of your students mm-hmm. because of all-day kindergarten or because of a kindergarten program you've had in place. Do you keep data, then, on each student who stays in your school? And at fifth grade level, can you then look at some kind of graph and see the visible improvement of each student, their proficiency levels, and know that that's based on their kindergarten experience? Or do you have multiple measures so that you look at a variety of things to determine that there was constant growth toward proficiency?
Mr. Davidson.
Thank you. I believe that all day K, when I look at, for instance, we do a Northwest evaluation models. So NWAs, we take NWAs, and when I look at 3 years, we've only done them for 3 years now, and I look at the inertia, our kindergarten students come out with about a 10 RIT score ahead of where a typical national average student would in kindergarten. I attribute that to all day K. I also attribute it to the tiered instruction models that we use in kindergarten, which we replicate all the way up through K-5. So when you look at the data of our students, just this past year, for instance, on MCAs, our entire student body was 69% proficient in math. And when you look at that, just 5 years ago, 4 years ago, we had a reverse gap at Longfellow. 86% of our black students of non-Hispanic origin were proficient. 80% of our white students were proficient. I think that's something to celebrate. And that was with a large population, too. When I look back at that, it's because of the tiered instruction models. All day K was the springboard. It provided the inertia for our students to come forward. It was handing that off between teams of teachers every year, because we keep data from day one when we actually start in May with our incoming kindergarten students. We keep data all the way through. Our collaboration model is what we do. We're in Rochester elementary schools. We're on what we call an A through F calendar. So A day, B day, C day. And we do that because of special areas. Art, music, phi ed, traveling teachers and whatnot. So once every 6 days, there's a 90-minute block that we formulate for our teams to meet. But everybody on that team meets together. So we have, I love spreadsheets. We have tons of spreadsheets up. We have the social needs, things that we see from a student socially. We have the academic needs. And then every person, EL teachers, special ed teachers, reading interventionists, our math interventionists, myself, our tech integrationist, and the grade level teachers all meet together. And we go through all of our kids and see what we can do to improve, to change. Do we stick with status quo because we're seeing the growth we want to have? And that data and that information kind of carries throughout the year. So when that student goes to second grade and third grade, we have all that information and we pick right up where we left off. That's the value of 45-15 as well, is that six-week break. We don't lose a lot of that. We come back by second day, we're right back into what we left off. I want to reiterate in here a lot. I talked about that balancing academic and social. To me, those character attributes are huge. Every Monday morning or the first day of the week, we come together as a Longfellow family. We preach family all the time there. All of our students come in the gym. All of our staff stand around them, and we teach character attributes. But I teach the first two of the year, and then it's our staff the rest of the year. It's everybody everywhere all the time. So our students know every staff member. Every staff member knows every student. And when the students know that and our staff know that, I mean, it's fantastic. So. Did I answer your question?
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, that was very, very interesting and valuable. have other Rochester schools followed your model? Not in the 45-15, but, you know, using the two instructional models or some of the great things, the innovations that you're using?
Yeah.
Mr. Davidson.
Actually, we've had lots of schools come and visit, and we go and visit lots of schools.
Okay.
The nice thing is amongst the principal group here, we talk all the time, and we collaborate. We have our monthly leadership meetings where we come together. We're very fortunate because 3 years ago, we were presented the opportunity to take on a pilot program. So we implemented one-to-one iPads with all of our first and second graders for a quarter, and it spiraled now to where we're completely one-to-one. We've made, I think, 4 school board presentations. We've had community open houses, just done lots of work behind the scenes with that, where we're showing great gains with that. Our students who come disadvantaged, if you will, to our school don't get that when they walk through our doors. We are making sure that our kids are prepared for what we don't know in the future. That's the interesting thing about education right now. We are preparing, we are educating students that we don't know what that world's going to be. If you just look 20 years ago, where we're at to where we are now, our kids need to be able to think critically. They have to be collaborative. They have to be able to use what they have to create and problem solve. I'm very proud to say that when our kids walk through our doors, they get that every day. So,
thank you very much.
I'm a little passionate about it. Sorry.
I love it.
Thank you. I have two other, actually three other folks on the list for questions, and then we will have to move on to our next panel. And once again, I'm worried we're going to work ourselves into a serious time crunch. Representative Dabney, I know you had your hand up, and were you wanting the other two questions that were not? Thank you. So I'll just ask Mr. Davidson, is percentage of special ed and
10%.
Homeless?
I think we have 31 of our 310 kids this year.
10%. All right. And any homeless children?
Not right now.
Did that cover it? I think
yes,
you covered.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in the previous questioning, there was it brought up character attributes are discussed. In that activity, do you have historic role models and examples of figures they can look up to when you do the character attributes?
Yes.
Mr. Davidson.
Madam Chair. Thank you. And Representative Quam, we do have that, and we actually invite in students of all cultures and races to come in and celebrate and honor what they do already in their daily lives. We have a high Latino population, so we have dancers come in and people come and do their counter storytelling, if you will, about their experiences. Our students are empowered to do that in the classroom as well. When they're doing their reading and their literature or their informational text, we will tie from their own backgrounds, their own heritage, into what they're learning here. It just makes for better learning. We've had dance groups come through. We've had the students dress up in their own native garb and present. And it's a pretty powerful thing because it's just a natural process of what we do every day there.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Following up on Representative Anzell's question, talking about your intercession classes,
mm-hmm.
It says they're taught by Longfellow staff, attended by about two-thirds of the students. Now, do those days count as part of your regular school contact days for both students and teachers, or are they outside that usual school year?
Mr. Davidson.
Those three-week breaks are actually non-contracted days. That's a separate contract. That, for instance, the traditional calendar, we do summer school in Rochester during the month of July, and there's funding set aside for that. We use the same funding, but we do it during our three-week breaks. So they're built within the school year. The interesting thing is it's best to have your own staff providing that service because the kids know those staff members, and those staff members know our kids. And no other staff are available because they're all teaching in the traditional calendar. So our staff generally are there anyway, so that's what they do. We provide those Monday through Friday. We start at 9 o'clock and go till noon. And then we partner with a 21st Century Community Learning Grant, and they do enrichment field trips in the afternoon. So our students who are receiving interventions or intercession, they do not miss out on any field trips or anything like that.
Representative, thank you. Representative Detmer, and I'll let you be the last question before we move to the next panel.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I asked this question the first testifier. The next two testifiers, have you followed your students as they went up and through the grade levels in terms of how they did later in their upper years in school and the graduation rates and so forth?
Madam Chair, I have not. I do know one of the neatest things, though, and it's something you don't know until you live it and see it. We have a lot of volunteers in August, a lot of high school volunteers and middle school volunteers that are reading with our students because they're not in school. That's a pretty powerful thing. And I think it speaks a lot to the character development of our kids that leave Longfellow, too. And we have a little mantra there that whenever you leave Longfellow, we want people to know you went to Longfellow by how you carry yourself, who you are in the community, the leadership that you take on. We're very proud of that. And our kids come in. For instance, just this last Friday was a district grading day for the rest of the district. We're in session. So we had high school basketball teams came in. Coaches said, you need to go to that school. You need to be readers there. And the volunteers that come in during that time, it's amazing.
And the other testifier, Madam Chair?
To either Mr. Ford or Ms. Fisk or both.
Yes, we have not traditionally followed our students and their progress, but we are we're going to begin. We have implemented AVID in our elementary school, which is a college readiness preparedness program, and it's also the mission is to close the achievement gap. So we have our third, fourth, fifth graders are our AVID students, and they will be, hopefully, most of those students, a lot of those students will be going into sixth grade at Columbia Middle School next year, Columbia Academy, and they're going to have AVID at Columbia Academy. So they've had AVID at the secondary for, I think, 7 years. So we have discussed, we want to track their progress, those students, particularly the AVID students, to see if indeed they meet the goal that we have for them and hopefully they have for themselves of being of attending college, being accepted into college. So we have not previously done that, but this is something that we are seriously looking into.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony and your good work, and thanks for taking the time to be here today. All right, next I'm going to call down representatives from Hiawatha and Harvest Network of Schools, representatives from Minnesota Rural Districts, and also representatives from MinCAN. So if those representatives from those three groups would come down, we'll go ahead and move on to our next panel. All right, and if it's more than can fit, if the rest of you want to just sit, and we'll have you swap out seats as it's your turn to testify. All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Whoever would like to lead off, please go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Kreisha, DFL Lead Representative Murphy, and members of the Education Finance Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Eli Kramer. I'm the Executive Director of Hiawatha Academies. We are a growing network of charter schools located in South Minneapolis. Our annual report is coming around, if you have a chance to page through as I'm speaking here. We are consistently on the Star Tribune's list of beating the odds schools. We've received reward and celebration status from the MDE, which we're grateful for and honored by. And we also have received the MDE's first ever large grant of federal dollars for charter replication of a high-performing school in the state of Minnesota, which we were very honored to receive just a few months ago. We serve children and families, 96% of whom qualify for free or reduced lunch, breakdown shortly, 97% of whom come from communities of color, 75% of whom are learning English for the first time. A very significant part of our population is Latino. For further demographic information, about 8% of our population special needs, 2% homeless or highly mobile, and of the free or reduced lunch, our breakdown is 85% free, 9% reduced. These are our demographics, but we serve children. They're children first. And in Minneapolis today, if our children went to the high school for which they were zoned, data based on their demographics suggests that they would have about a 20% chance of graduating from any form of higher education. This in a Minnesota which, as you all know, I'm very sure about 70, if not more, 70% of all jobs will require some form of higher education in just a few years' time. This is the imminent challenge before all of us today. How do we set all of our children up for success in the great state of Minnesota that they will inherit and eventually lead? The first step, in my opinion, is a belief in the possible. Is it possible for all children to succeed at high levels? The answer is a resounding yes. At schools like Hiawatha Academies and many of my fellow testifiers today, plus many more across the country, we're showing that through hard work, more time, high expectations for all kids, and a laser-like focus on preparation for college, we can help all students achieve at high levels. Our mission at Hiawatha is to prepare all of our scholars with the knowledge, character, and leadership skills to graduate from college and serve the common good. As you take some time to look through our annual report, hopefully it will give you an overview of a bit of how we do that. To give you a very small slice of some of our academic results, and by the way, we know that academics and testing are only one of the many important things that matter. Last year, our 7th grade math students finished just behind Edina and Matamidi and just ahead of Wayzata in achievement. 78% of our kids met or exceeded state standards in math. The year before that, our 5th graders outperformed Edina in science. If they're representatives from Edina, I'm sorry to bash you. We're proud of our scholars for their achievements, but our work is not done. In just under 5 years' time, our first high school, Hiawatha Collegiate High School, will see its inaugural graduating class. Our goal is for 100% of our students to graduate from Hiawatha High School, 100% of our students to enroll in college of some kind, and 100% of our students persist through college. This in a city where currently only 54% of all kids graduate from high school on time. And for kids like the ones we serve, only about 10% of kids like the ones we serve who go through their zoned school end up receiving a bachelor's degree, only 10%. We can and we must do better. And we're here together to explore different perspectives on the question of how to do better. From my perspective, the single biggest challenge faced by Minnesota schools, and therefore our single biggest opportunity, is about people. Great teachers and leaders make great schools, plain and simple. Currently, I see three major obstacles to the way we organize our schools from a people perspective that, if changed, could unleash a fundamentally different future for public schools, district, and charter across our state, and I wanted to share a few thoughts about those. First, we currently erect barriers to entry for great proven educators in Minnesota. Some of Hiawatha Academy's best teachers are teachers that have a track record of success closing the achievement gap in a different state. Unfortunately, though they may have a license from another state or a rock-solid record of student achievement, these educators are often told that they must go back to graduate school at their own expense before they teach in Minnesota. We can do better than this. We can imagine a new way to ensure high standards for all teachers without erecting bureaucratic barriers. This is not a district versus charter issue. Every school in the state needs great teachers. Let's make Minnesota, through our policies and rules, a talent magnet rather than a talent repellent. A second point on teacher diversity. Currently 3.5% of all licensed teachers in the state of Minnesota, as I'm sure you know, are teachers from communities of color. Only 3.5% of all teachers. Today, 70% of all kids in Minneapolis public schools are from communities of color. 3.5%, 70%. It's common sense to conclude that students will benefit from having more teachers that are representative of their communities, and there's a lot more work to be done. How do we get a more representative teacher population? Here's a few ideas that I've thought of. Ensure that all pathways into teaching, whether it's traditional routes, alternative routes, community expert routes, are robust, transparent, and viewed through this diversity lens. Then promote educational programs around the state that drive us forward on this goal, whether they be graduate schools, programs like Minneapolis Public Schools' Grow Our Own initiative, or Teach for America, where upwards of 40% of incoming teachers self-identify as teachers of color. Third and final point I'd like to make is about school, principal, and teacher autonomy. I would like to call attention to the idea of autonomy as it relates to how we organize our people for success in schools. From my perspective, our best chance of success in reversing the opportunity gap comes if and only if teachers and leaders within a school are united in common cause, in service of the same mission to offer a great educational opportunity to every child, regardless of their background. How do we get united teams working together toward this goal within schools? For one thing, people have to want to work with each other. Principals who choose their own teachers and teachers who choose their own leaders give us a much better chance of developing organizational cultures within schools where excellence is the standard. Imagine a world where a CEO of a business or a nonprofit executive, due to some kind of commerce rules or regulations, was unable to pick her own team within her organization, not able to hire the leaders and employees that she believed would best help her fulfill her mission. Imagine what that CEO would be thinking about and testifying about before the legislature: people policies. In Minnesota schools currently, this is the challenge that we face. Between challenges with statutes, regulations that are not totally clear from the Board of Teaching, and people policies at the school or district level, this basic fact is true: principals don't always pick their teachers, and teachers don't always pick their principals. From my perspective, if we could pull this single lever, we would go a very long way towards creating the conditions under which the future of public education in Minnesota would shine most bright. The challenges we face today are great. Let's make 2015 a year of big, bold, optimistic thinking and overcome this challenge together. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello to the Madam Chair and to the committee. My name is Dr. Callie LaLuba, and I'm the Chief Academic Officer for Harvest Network of Schools. We're located in Minneapolis, Minnesota, serving 1,300 African American scholars who are 98% free and reduced lunch, 10% special ed, and I believe 5% homeless. Our goal over the next decade is to increase our enrollment and educate 3,500 scholars, believing that education is a lever for change. We provided you a handout to kind of share what we believe are the gaps and why our students cannot succeed and how we address them. So if you turn to page 2 in your handout, you'll see that we, in our mission to instruct, empower, enable, and guide children to achieve superior academic, social, and moral development, have identified 5 gaps that all successful schools need to address if they're serving our students with our challenges. Those gaps are the time gap, the leadership gap, the teaching gap, the preparation gap, and the belief gap. As Mr. Kramer eloquently stated, we all have to believe that our students are capable of learning. That's where it starts. We have to have a growth mindset that if we believe that our children can learn, then we will be able to find the research-based practices to help them do just that. And so at Harvest Network of Schools, that's where we start, that all our students can learn, and we will will them to learn if we must. The next thing is the preparation gap. We understand that many of our scholars come to us and they're not prepared. We have kindergartners who enter our doors who don't know their alphabets, where in other places they know all of them. And so we have to develop a curriculum and a structure that will support that learning and close those gaps, and that's what we do. We also understand that there's a time gap, that there are students that we serve that may not have the structures or the opportunity of their other peers. And so we ensure that we have an extended day and extended time to make sure that they have the educational components they need to compete with their peers. And we know that there is a leadership gap. And as Mr. Kramer said, we need great leaders who are result-oriented, who know how to motivate teachers, and also how to put their hands on resources that will positively impact our students. And so we invest in that kind of leadership. In order to close these gaps, we have what we call the gap closing framework, where we put our students at the center. So we understand that they have all these challenges, and as a result, we have built a system around it. We believe that in order for teachers to provide good instruction, they must teach, assess, and reflect. And we do that cycle continuously throughout the year. We understand that feedback and observation is key. And so we have a system where we observe our teachers informally at least twice a month and give face-to-face feedback so that they can grow in their profession and become better teachers for the scholars who need their best instruction. And then we make sure that our calendar and our operations support those teachers doing that work in a time frame that is meaningful. As a result, you will see our scores. And our scores are not where we want them to be, nor do they represent where we've been. But it still shows and demonstrates that if you put these practices in place in schools that work with our children, there are gains that can be made. And as you see, in most cases, we outperform Minnesota African American students across the state of Minnesota and also African American students in a Minneapolis public school district. At times, we even are neck to neck with the state data. For example, if you look at our slide, our Harvest Prep, our flagship school, we're 69% proficient on the math assessment compared to the state. So we know that the things that we are working towards, the things that we focus on, has been effective. Now, has there been a dip in scores? Yes, there has. Everybody's adjusting to Common Core. And we're excited about meeting those challenges. And as a result, we've increased professional development. We've given more planning time to our teachers and more collaboration time so they can plan for our students. We also know intervention is key. So we have three opportunities during the week where our students get to experience intervention in math and reading. We have a growth mindset club that meets on their prep for 60 minutes daily. We also have the No Struggle, No Progress program that we have on Fridays from 2:45, where they get technology intervention and one-on-one intervention. We also have what we call No Child Left Unsupervised. And the purpose of this program is to make sure that during our core subjects, we have three adults in the classroom to make sure that small instruction without interruption can proceed. So we are working hard and continuing to believe that our students can achieve what many people feel are the impossible. And as you look through our packet, you will see that as a result of that, we've had some decreases, but we are increasing. We have been recognized by the multiple measurement rating that states that if our students are with us for a period of time, we can provide them with significant growth. We also have been recognized as the Beating Odds schools, Harvest and Mastery, for their performance on the MCA. And what I'm also proud to share with you is that our work with African American boys and how they perform has been phenomenal. If you look at page 5, you'll see that 82% of our African American boys were proficient on the MCA math assessment in Harvest Prep, 69% at Mastery, and 59% at Best Academy. Altogether, 70% of our boys were proficient on the assessment. Why is this important? It's important because we hear daily how African American males are struggling to get an education and finding a pathway to success instead of debt. So it is important work that we're doing, and we're planning to continue that over the next decade. So we have a growth model that you will see on the last page. You'll see that we've already built out a cluster. We have three charter schools, in two buildings, and our goal over the next decade is to build out the second cluster. Mr. Kramer did an excellent job pointing out some of our challenges in education. I just want to add to that. Parent awareness is extremely important. We need to not only share with our parents what best practices are, where they need to educate their scholars, but also how they can join in the work. Programs like Northside Achievement Zone and other programs that really focus on parent education, I believe, have been beneficial to our scholars. We also need to make sure that as teachers go through our colleges and universities, they are prepared to work with the scholars with the gaps and the challenges that they have. Teachers often come to us new, and we're teaching them how to teach. We're teaching them how to cope with some of the behaviors that they're facing, and we're also teaching them grit, how to persevere through a long day with the requirements of a teacher. And so I think that our programs are strong, but we can strengthen those college and university programs to meet the needs of our scholars. Thank you for your time and an opportunity to testify in front of you today.
Thank you, Dr. Lalubba. I love your suggestions, but your passion just comes through, and I appreciate what you're doing. Representative Mullery, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair. I didn't get all the answers to Jim's questions, but I also had one I should have asked all along, which is the turnover rate.
To either of the testifiers? So if you have any information on turnover, I'm assuming you mean students that come in and then move out of your schools.
Yes, leave
right.
The school.
Yes. So to whoever wants to take that.
Yeah, specifically about student retention, our rates are in mid-90s, 93 to 95% of our students are coming back to us each year.
And I would say ours were between 70 and 80% that are coming back each year. We have also a group of students that will leave and then return quite frequently.
Representative Mullery?
No.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you. And so we'll move then to our next group of testifiers. I'm sorry.
Mr. Mullery had asked them, I think specifically with Mr. Kaplan, I didn't hear the percentage of special education students or homeless, highly mobile students at Hiawatha.
All right, yes, if you go ahead and repeat those.
Sure,
thank
I'd be
you.
Happy to. So starting from the top, these were the demographic data points that I shared. 96% of all students are free or reduced lunch. 97% come from communities of color. And then farther down the list, 75% are English learners, 8% special education, 2% homeless or highly mobile. And of the free or reduced lunch, the breakdown is 85% free, 9% reduced.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, thank you both very much, and we'll bring the next group of folks in this panel. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Daniel Sellers, honored to serve as Executive Director of MNCAN, a nonprofit education advocacy, working towards great public schools for all Minnesota kids. I was invited today by the Chair to share lessons that we learned from schools that are changing the odds for their students, district schools, especially in greater Minnesota, which is, I'm glad that I get to lead into our friends at MREA. To think about how schools are best serving low-income students and students of color with academic outcomes better than expected. I have to say it's a little bit tough for me to follow the strong performances of Mr. Kramer and Dr. Lalubba. And let me just quickly say, if you've never been to Harvest Prep, the power of that school reaches far beyond the students. I was trying to woo my wife to move here from San Francisco, where they have a strong education movement, and she was unconvinced by the schools here. I took her to visit Harvest Prep, and she was on the next flight here to Minnesota. So the powers are strong. Last school year, we set out across Minnesota and visited 19 communities, 28 schools, and 47 classrooms, all to better understand exactly what you're discussing today. What lessons can be learned from some of Minnesota's schools that are closing the achievement gap, especially in greater Minnesota? Over 2 weeks, we put close to 2,000 miles on our car. And, of course, I should say I'm not the expert here. The experts are those that we met with, and so I'd like to share some of the lessons that we learned. The report that is in your hands right now is sort of one of my final recommendations, which has to do with pre-K through third grade alignment, but a couple of other things that stood out. And you guys have heard this already, but let me just start by saying, changing the odds schools hold incredibly high expectations and standards for every student. One of the things that most struck us was the no-excuses approach of almost every school we visited. All the schools acknowledge the challenges associated with students who grow up in poverty, but they refuse to allow that recognition to lead to excuses for why students cannot succeed. As one teacher in Deer River told us, our responsibility is to educate every student that walks through that door with whatever baggage they bring to school. We expect excellence for ourselves and our students regardless of what's going on at home. Another mantra that we heard time and again was around flexibility. Several principals and superintendents lamented the lack of flexibility around teacher licensure requirements, which you've heard from several folks, especially for teacher candidates coming from outside of Minnesota. And educators in Minnesota, from Ashby to Verndale to the Prairie Wetlands Learning Center in Fergus Falls, asked for more flexibility to meet state standards, especially around allowing vocational and technical coursework to count towards state math and science graduation requirements. Third, the principal from Longfellow, I think, said that that a lot of this was about relationships, and I agree with that. But I'll go one further as I listen to him and the other folks that you've heard from, which is one key ingredient to closing the achievement gap is leadership. In addition to those that you've heard from today, Kim Goodwin, the principal at LaPorte Secondary School, was an exceptionally dynamic leader. She was able to articulate a strategy and vision for her school, set that vision for success, and invest her school culture around ensuring that every student, regardless of the challenges they face, are driven to succeed. It was amazing to listen to her emphasize the work that her teachers are doing and that she sees them doing by giving them the flexibility to operate in ways that best meet the needs of their students. She has a clear strategy for how she's going to meet each individual need of her students, and she holds herself accountable to the results, academic results of her school, despite the challenges that her students face. Fourth, data-driven instruction. As Amy Gallitz, principal at the time of King Elementary in Deer River, now superintendent of Floodwood Schools, said, we realized teachers needed to be circling back and looking at student data far more often than they were. Almost every school we visited on this list had dedicated time set aside to review student achievement data, look at results of assessments, and use that information to inform classroom instruction. Shane Tappy, who's the principal at Ashby Public Schools, said their success has been made possible by giving teachers more flexibility and resources to collaborate on interventions and differentiated learning, better review and analysis of assessment data, and adopting a culture of no excuses for student achievement. The fifth thing that I'll say is sitting in your hands, which is we investigated quite in depth, how do we align instruction from pre-K through third grade? How do we make sure that what's happening in preschool is actually aligned to preparing kids to read for third grade? I'm almost embarrassed to say that there are more than 50 pages in that report in your hands, but on page 50 of that report, we make some policy and practitioner recommendations that I won't go through one by one, but I hope you'll take a moment to review, especially if you're as passionate about I am as ensuring that all kids can read by third grade. The second to last thing I'll say has to do with evaluations. We did these school visits last school year, so in the fall of 2013 and into the spring of 2014. Almost every school that we visited was already doing robust teacher evaluations. They weren't waiting for the state. They weren't waiting for state funding. They weren't waiting for any sort of mandate. These are school leaders and school teams that recognize the importance of teacher evaluations. And Representative Marquardt, as we talked about yesterday, lots and lots of these teachers felt like they were benefiting from the evaluations and were finally getting needed feedback on their practice that helped drive their own professional development. And I have to say, in almost every single case, this is something that they started long before the state was talking about it, because they recognized the importance of evaluations to improving teachers. And last but not least, I didn't hand this out, although I will leave up here if you're particularly interested in it, another report that we released last year, which has received praise all the way up to Education Secretary Arnie Duncan and lots in between, which is a report on Native American student achievement. And if it's something you're interested in, I will leave some reports up here for you. We saw a crisis in terms of meeting the needs of Native American students. As you all know, Native Americans belong to sovereign tribal nations. These nations negotiated treaties in which they exchanged land for future promises, and some of those promises concern education. I encourage you to make sure you know what those are. And we heard again and again we need to honor those treaty and trust obligations. And I should say one specific program, and I don't want to dwell on programs, but Phil Beadle at Churchill Elementary in Cloquet and many other Indian education directors encouraged us to advocate, and so I am here, for additional capacity to meet the needs of Native American students through the expansion of the Success for the Future program for Minnesota Native American students. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and I welcome any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Sellers. And we'll have the representatives of MREA come on up.
Madam Chair and committee.
Welcome to the committee. And just as always, we're going to run into a time crunch. So if I could ask you both, and I'll ask all the other testifiers, to summarize, and again, if you particularly emphasize, you know, takeaways for the committee members on what strategies and that you found are particularly effective and things we could try to apply to schools across the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Fred Nolan, Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association. We're the voice of 199 member school districts. I want to thank Dan Sellers for mentioning several of them to you just recently, educating 186,000 students every day. I'm pleased to be here with Superintendent Kathy Belsheim, member District Ogilvie, to share with you, to your point, a very specific teacher professional development strategy which is being used by a number of rural schools to good effect, called Authentic Intellectual Work, AIW. I'll briefly explain what AIW is, the remarkable effect it's having in Iowa on student achievement. Yes, I said Iowa. And then I'm going to turn it over to Superintendent Belsheim, who described the Ogilvie journey, and then I'll close with some information about some high schools in northern Minnesota. If you look at the handout, which is coming around to you, in the upper right-hand picture is a photo from yesterday morning, sometime between 7 and 8 a.m., when a teacher team was discussing either someone's task they had given students or planning to, or student work, or a video clip of themselves teaching. The teachers bring lessons to the team that aren't working. The students are not engaging to the depth or with the critical questioning and learning needed to learn. The teachers will score the lesson, provide suggestion of improvement, and then the presenting teacher will choose the improvement suggestions which he or she thinks will work. That's it, in a nutshell. But it's a habit. It's the repetition of doing this 15 to 20 times a year over the years by which the standards for higher order thinking, conceptual understanding, and value beyond school, the connection between the classroom and the real world, sink in and change the culture of the instruction, the way teachers think, and the learning of the whole school. In Iowa, this has grown to be the number one secondary instruction improvement strategy. If you look at the chart in the middle of the page of the handout here, you will see this is a large matched pair study where they had over 30 high schools matched up between on SES, previous achievement, etc., and said, what is the advantage of having a full school, every staff member engaging in AIW learning teams? You will see in the red asterisked marks, those are the improvements on the Iowa Test of Basic Skills for an average student if they were in an AIW school, full staff, full year, versus a non-AIW school. You see an 11% increase in mathematics. This isn't a mathematics program. And I can go on to that with much detail. I'd recommend if you wanted to look at some R&D, you get onto the Iowa Department of Ed site and take a look at it. Finally, why do teachers get engaged in this?
Take a look at the testimony of the teacher at the bottom of the page. She talks about the general dysfunction, the general disconnect of ordinary professional development. And then at the end, she summarizes, when I sit with my AIW colleagues and score a task, student work, or instruction, I'm empowered by teachers leading teachers. Together, we break down the barriers of isolation and help each other become better professionals in the classroom by creating student work that is meaningful and purposeful. With that, I'll turn it over to Superintendent Belsheim for the Ogilvie story.
Good afternoon, members of the House Education Finance Committee. I am Kathy Belsheim, Superintendent of Ogilvie Public Schools, and I thank you for this opportunity to share the academic success of our students and staff with you today. At Ogilvie, we have a total student population of approximately 535 students, K through 12. We also do have a pre-K program on site. We have a free and reduced rate of approximately 55.2%, with 8% being reduced and the other 47% being free. We are about a 98% white population school district. We do have some Hispanic and American Indian students. Our high school has 231 of those 535 students. AIW, Authentic Intellectual Work, has dramatically changed the teaching and learning within our school system. In 2010, as indicated in your handout from our school, Ogilvie High School was identified as a SIG, School Improvement Grant School. At that time, I became the high school's SIG turnaround officer. I was responsible for all of the reporting to MDE of the progress that was being made at raising student achievement for the Ogilvie High School students. I was also a member of the school's AIW Professional Learning Committee, so I was sat with the teachers as a committee member. Teachers were skeptical at first of this new professional development program, but soon became convinced that their teaching was becoming richer and the student learning was becoming more engaging, more meaningful, very relevant to the students. The program does focus, as Fred had shared, on teachers' tasks, their actual lessons, student performance, how the student actually follows the directions on the task, and the instruction, the actual delivery. Our teachers are videotaped periodically during the school year of their actual lesson instruction delivery. Each of those components then are brought to our AIW PLC meetings, where diverse groups of teachers analyze how construction and depth of knowledge, how that conceptual understanding, how elaborated communication and substantive conversation, how higher order thinking skills, and actually the value beyond school, those areas, how they are actually being accomplished through that lesson, through that instruction. The educational dialogue that began to take place would knock your socks off. The transformation of our turnaround school had begun, and AIW has continued to be that framework of instruction now into our fifth year, where we have implemented AIW pre-K through 12 across our Ogilvie School District. I'd like to share just a few testimonials with you from teachers at our school. Deb Swenson, high school English teacher, she states, AIW has served two major purposes in my classroom. Number one, it has shifted the focus from teacher-directed learning to student outcomes and goals. Kids no longer show up to see me work, but are now involved in their own discoveries. And second, AIW has offered a forum for collaboration with other teachers that had never been present before in our PLC structures. The focus on my curriculum, my students, my methodology, and my students' results has become a welcome innovation for each teacher and student in the district. It gives solutions, and we can see the results. After using AIW practices, I have eliminated nearly all drill and rote learning in favor of substantive discussions and student-involved learning. My curriculum is more focused and targeted for all learners. Jess Lang, a fifth grade teacher who also teaches eighth grade algebra. AIW has changed my teaching Even the students know that we talk about them and their quality of work. The students appreciate the changes to increase the rigor of their learning expectations. Jesse Shepherd, an elementary special ed teacher. In the midst of the endless change Ogilvy School District has endured, AIW has been a place of comfort and peace for our staff. AIW has allowed us to take a team-based approach to student learning. AIW has given the staff of our Ogilvy School District the opportunity to change the way we approach student learning by changing our teaching practices. And lastly, Kate Sakala, High School Social Studies. I truly believe that AIW has been the most useful, applicable, practical, and helpful professional development initiative that I have experienced in 26 years of teaching. Due to its focus, students are directly impacted because every component targeted is analyzed, so lessons, tasks, instruction, work, etc. can be modified, it can be reimagined, and or improved to benefit students. Getting feedback from colleagues promotes interdisciplinary ideas and professional discussion among coworkers. It is a commitment, but one worth investing in because it helps kids. And it is the kids that we're responsible for. AIW has given our students at Ogilvy the answer to why they're expected to learn, and also provides that authentic relevance, the value beyond school for them, of what the teacher's instruction is providing. Ogilvy does have increased student achievement, as indicated in our report to you, and the achievement gap is closing because good instruction for all students achieves that outcome. In conclusion, the framework of AIW assisted Ogilvy High School rising from the depths of despair, labeled as a SIG school in 2010, to a celebration eligible school in 2012, earning a bronze level award from the U.S. News and World Report as one of America's best high schools in 2013, to achieving AYP in all subgroups in 2014. I thank you so much for your time this afternoon, and if you would have any questions for me. I do also believe I share with you the special needs population. Our special ed population at our high school is about 21%.
Representative Marquardt.
So, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. It sounds like some very good improvements there. And I had one question. Did you work with any of the regional centers of excellence?
Yes.
Ms. Belsheim.
Yes, we did. It's Susan Burris at the middle, you know, regional office in St. Cloud did actually come to our school, helped with the framework, but she came in. The regional centers were actually created after the SIG was already in place. So they were used as more of a resource reference rather than the actual, you know, base ground framework to start with.
Thank you. Representative Davi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Principal, thank you for providing the special education statistic. Can you help us with percentage of students at your school that are qualified for free lunch, reduced price lunch, and what percentage of your students are homeless or highly mobile?
Yes, I shared that we have approximately 55% of our students are free and reduced, 8% reduced, and 47% free. And we at this time have one indicated homeless student.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep. Madam Chair, I might give the same statistics for the schools on the back, which are Kellyer and Bagley. Bagley High School has 444 students, free and reduced lunch population of 55%, 15% special ed, American Indian population 27%. Kellyer has 103 students in high school 7 through 12, 84.5% free and reduced lunch, 17% special ed, 48% American Indian students. I'm sorry, I don't know the specific free students. I'm not the administrator. I got this off the MDE site sitting in the chair there. I also don't know they're mobile. I could find those things for the committee if they would really like
appreciate
those.
It.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Dabney.
I would ask you to look at the back, which is the same story of AIW, except in northern high schools with a grant-funded project. Again, the achievement increased in 10th grade just in 2 years by 6 percentage points, while the state 10th grade reading achievement declined. And the gap narrowed slightly, while the achievement gap between free and reduced lunch and non-free and reduced lunch state increased by a third. So clearly more positive trends, and they attribute that to authentic intellectual work as well. And we would be available for questions and further discussion.
Thank you. Thank you to both of you, and congratulations on your success and your hard work.
Thank you
in
very
school.
Much.
Thank you. All right. As usual, we are running very short of time. I do want to try to get to the next panel if we can, and we may run over just a few minutes. I have Metro Schools, representative from Minneapolis Schools, from Osseo, Anoka, Hennepin, Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan. And I don't think we can get to the rest today. I would say that the next 2 days of our committee time are devoted to governor's budget, and then Thursday with primarily, I'll call it open mic for people that want to make comments. If any of you are able to come back and would like to present testimony on Thursday, we would welcome that. And again, I apologize. Again, this is a big topic, and we're trying to find ways to squeeze down our presentations so we can have more dialogue. And I know there's a lot of great stories to hear from. So with that, thank you. Whoever wants to lead off, please go right ahead and just provide your name for the record. And I would ask you to keep your remarks very brief, because we are technically supposed to be done at 2:30. And offer this is your chance to offer your top tips, you know, things that are working that you want to share with the state. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Welcome.
My name is Kate McGuire, and I'm honored to serve as the superintendent for Osseo Area Schools. Thank you for providing the opportunity to speak today. You have four documents related to my testimony: our strategic plan, graduation rate data, suspension data, and our legislative platform. Like all good teachers, I'll start with the end in mind. I'm going to share two pieces of evidence of results of closing the racial achievement gaps on two important metrics, tell you about some practices that have led to those results, and urge you to consider how your decisions this session will impact the practitioners on the ground in Osseo area schools. In order to consider the data that I'll share, it's important to know who we are. Osseo Area Schools is the fifth largest district in Minnesota, serving approximately 20,000 students in the northwest suburbs of the metro area. Here's how we're different than other large suburban districts. We serve 52% students of color. We serve the third highest number of students of color in the state of Minnesota. We serve the second highest number of Asian Pacific Islander students in the state. We have 11 racially identifiable schools, and we're a racially isolated school district. We have 34% free students for lunch, 9% reduced, 13% special ed, 15% highly mobile, and 250 identified homeless students. I'd like to share examples of results on two important metrics. First, you have a graphic that shows dramatic gains in our graduation rates, a key metric in the world's best workforce expectations. You can see that over the past 5 years, the on-time graduation rate for our students in poverty and Asian Pacific Islander students has increased significantly. Most notably, the rate of on-time graduation for our black students has increased 26%. In fact, Osseo Area School District has shown the largest increase in the state among similar districts. Among similar schools, Park Center Senior High International Baccalaureate World School ranks in the top two schools in the state for improving the graduation rate for black students. They were number one in the five-year period between 2008 and 2012, and number two in the state in the five-year period of 2009 to 2013. The second data point that I prepared for you tells the story of our work to reduce suspensions from school. We are aggressively tackling predictable racial disparities in suspensions from school, a topic which has gained significant national and local attention. There's considerable research linking suspensions to high risk of not graduating from high school and high risk of involvement in the criminal justice system. We believe that reducing suspensions from school have contributed directly to the increase in graduation rates. Improvements like this, as you've heard some themes from folks who have testified before us, results like this are never the impact of any one thing. It's always the result of a collective set of practices implemented over time. Here's what it takes in Osseo to get the kind of improvements that you have seen in the data that I've provided. First, it takes a shared vision for all of our students that has racial equity at its core. It takes intentional focus on developing relationships. It takes effective instructional and administrative practice. It takes professional development to influence the expected change to teaching and administrative practice. It takes a cadre of master teacher coaches, staff development teachers, and racial equity staff working alongside principals and classroom teachers to influence their practice. In Osseo, we strategically use our resources, including QComp dollars and academic and integration for Minnesota revenue, to sustain 40 master teacher coaches, equity staff, including bilingual program assistants, and staff development specialists to do this work. Further, in order to keep students in the classroom when they might otherwise be suspended from school, we need behavior intervention teachers, counselors, mental health professionals, and others who can wrap services around our most behaviorally involved students to support their academic success. I want to thank you for making education a top priority, and I urge you to stay the course on the vision you've established through the World's Best Workforce legislation. Build on the momentum of the last legislative session and emphasize what it is we want for all Minnesota students. I urge you to provide sustainable and predictable funding for schools through an increase in the basic formula and an increase in special education funding to reduce the cross-subsidy. Because this allows school districts to maintain classroom teachers and support staff that enable us to do the work that you've heard described, to build the critical relationships that we have to build with students and families, to provide job-embedded professional development for teachers and principals, and to intervene with students to support academic success. I urge you to maintain the current level of funding for current QComp districts while determining a way to fully fund and align the alternative teacher professional pay system and the teacher development and evaluation program for all school districts in Minnesota. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Ms. McGuire. All right, to the rest of our testifiers, please, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to keep it very brief. If you want to offer points of agreement or specifically other suggestions, I would recommend that you highlight those, but I'm going to be very tight on the time because we have another committee coming in here. Welcome.
Madam Chair, I'll try to be very brief. I'm David Law, Superintendent of the Kennepin School District and a neighbor to Kate McGuire. I share her passion. We have Representative Dabney, 9,500 students that qualify for free, which is 25% of our population. Another 8% is reduced. We have 9,000 students of color. Milkenapin is among the top 10 in the metro area for the smallest achievement gap. Only two school districts in the metro have a higher number of pre-reduced students have a smaller achievement gap. We've got this success through early intervention with school readiness programming, using comp ed funding to address students K-3, quality programming to find the success for every student in our entire program, and concurrent enrollment where we have 75% of our students taking college coursework. Please continue to support us. Don't make us compete against each other for students and send bad messages to places where there are bad school districts. Support all of us. Invest in the general fund. Consistent comp ed funding is a must for us. We have 90% of our first and second graders at proficiency based on comp ed funding. If that goes away, we lose $3.2 million entirely invested in K-3 readiness. Please consider that. Concurrent enrollment so that we can connect our kids to college, all students. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I was going to say good evening. It's been a while, right? Good afternoon, Madam Chair Loon. I'm thrilled to be here. My name is Suzanne Griffin, and I am the Chief Academic Officer from the Minneapolis Public Schools. I want to just share with you quickly some of our statistics, and then I'll just move right to some of the things that we're doing right now to close the achievement gap in our schools. We have a population of about 19% special ed students, about 13% homeless and highly mobile students, about 59% students who are on free lunch, and about 6% of our students are on reduced lunch. Minneapolis represents about 7% of the state's free and reduced lunch population and roughly about 13% of the state LEP population served. Combined with our neighboring Central City, St. Paul, we account for roughly 1 in 6 students receiving free and reduced price lunch, and 1 in 3 of the EL students served in the state. Our combined districts have over 1 in 5 of the Minnesota state Black, Asian, and students of color. So Minneapolis Public Schools will play a critical role in reducing state achievement gaps for low-income students of color and English learners. And we play a key state role in ensuring equitable education for all learners. Just want to share a few things that we're doing to close the gap. One of the things is supporting our turnaround team who serves our high-priority schools. This team includes a specialist for climate and culture, math and reading specialists who coach and develop instructional staff, a talent development specialist who ensures the full spectrum of learners is served in our high-priority schools, and a special education specialist who critically analyzes the rates and disproportionality of referrals and expands the use of inclusive practices. We also have invested in additional learning time. We have expanded our extended time opportunities for students, including after school, Saturday school, spring break and winter break academies, and summer school. We've added the Office of Black Male Achievement to leverage national research, local experts, community, families, and students in collaborative partnerships to rapidly accelerate positive outcomes, specifically for our students who are black males. And we've embarked on a process through creating efficiencies in central office and using a student-based allocation budgeting model to support more equitable and transparent budgeting processes and to provide more direct resources to our schools. We've also expanded our preschool. 124 additional preschool-age children are being served in High Five and Three School through scholarships. We encourage you to continue to support that. We're currently developing plans to further expand at our high-priority schools. We've also expanded our mental health counselors. We are now able to serve students in nearly half of our schools. We would encourage you to continue to invest in that as well. We have focused our academic priorities and improved our human capital strategies, including our Grow Your Own efforts, which are really designed to recruit, develop, and select and retain high-quality staff that more closely reflect the demographics of our students. Continue to focus on our teacher evaluation system to better help us make tenure decisions and to guide our peer assistance and review process. And finally, we've really worked on improving our high school experience. Among other efforts, we've developed real-time data dashboards that assist us in monitoring students' progress toward on-time graduation and identifying multiple pathways to graduation so students can personalize their experience towards careers or graduation or post-secondary experiences. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have Dr. Olson from Rosemont, Apple Valley Eagan. Welcome. Please state your name for the record. And Dr. Olson, you get to be the last word today.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson Loon and members of the House Education Finance Committee. My name is Julie Olson, and I'm the Director of Elementary Ed for the District Rosemont Apple Valley School System, also known as District 196. It's the fourth largest district in the state, serving 160,000 residents and 27,000 E through 12 students in 34 schools and learning centers. I worked as at the elementary level for 40 years as an elementary principal and the past 11 years as director of elementary ed for the district. I came to talk about Cedar Park Elementary because it was our celebration school and they've made very significant changes in their in the achievement gap differences. And I have some of those statistics for you, although I didn't prepare a handout. What I would say is I agree with my colleagues, particularly Superintendent McGuire, speaking about the needs that we have and continuing to support those. Overwhelmingly, the full-day kindergarten, we are very excited about your support for that and would say that the early childhood is an area where we're trying to really grow our program and understand that as our students are coming in, that it is really critical that we have that support is there and trying to increase our four-year-old programming. Cedar Park Elementary, their work, they have 56% students of color, approximately 26% black, 15% Asian, and 13% Hispanic, around 1% American Indian. Free and reduced lunch is 52% of the students. 83% of those are free, and 17% of those are reduced. 15% are eligible for English language services, 11% for special ed. Less than 1% is homeless or mobile. They converted to a magnet school in 2007. The school had not made adequate yearly progress in a number of different sub-cells. For the past 3 years, Cedar Park STEM School has made AYP in all 18 subgroup cells and was recently recognized as one of 22 celebration schools in the state for performing in the top 15 to 25% of elementary schools that receive Title I. It has an enrollment of 500. It had an enrollment of 500 kids. It's now over 700 kids in the last 8 years, with a wait list of families who would like to enroll their children there. It's a success story for a number of reasons, including and perhaps most importantly is the sense of community at Cedar Park and the active involvement of parents and staff working with students at the center of the decision making that goes on in the school. Without going into specific statistics, where we've seen great growth for our black students, even while some state scores have dropped, and great gains for Hispanic students, what would they say the success was due to? Implementing a literacy collaborative model, which integrates science and social studies into the literacy instruction. It reduces the fractionalization that sometimes we see in a school day, and it's actually at the center of Common Core. So it really makes a lot of sense for us to move forward with that. Some scheduling changes to help students maximize the time that they spend in classroom, and support services being delivered in classrooms to provide a more seamless learning experience for students. A daily focus on managed independent learners and activities that help them to practice research, reading and writing, and sharing with other learners in their classroom and in the community in meaningful, authentic ways.
Dr. Olson, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask you to end it. The next committee has to come in, and we are apologizing profusely to Chairman Nornes for taking up some of his time.
Okay.
So,
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. And if you would like to send any additional comments to the committee, I'm sorry to have to cut this off. We'd welcome them, and I appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. To those who we weren't able to hear from, again, I apologize, but you will have an opportunity on Thursday if you wish to return, and the committee is adjourned.